Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants. Price may vary.
Here's an HIV pill dilemma for you. Picture the scene. There's a rooftop sunset with fairy lights, and you're vibing with friends. You remember you've got to take your HIV pill. Important, yes, but the fun moment is gone. Did you know there's a long-acting treatment option available? So catch the sunset and keep the party going. Visit pillfreehiv.com today to learn more. Brought to you by Vive Healthcare.
Hey, ladies. Sorry to start the show this way, but I am just now watching the video of this ship hitting that bridge in Baltimore. And girl, what in the Michael Bay?
Girl.
What in the Armageddon?
It's actually shocking. It's a shocking video.
Thoughts and prayers to all those affected. Oh, my goodness. With that, hey, ladies, I'm Sam Sanders.
I'm Saeed Jones.
And I'm Zach Stafford. And you're listening to Vibe Check. Welcome to the chaos, everybody.
I mean, honey, there's just a lot going on. We're not even talking about our topics. We just mean this is a show about news, culture, and how it all feels. And baby, it feels shook. It feels
also,
like the universe
bridges collapsing, houses getting raided, rappers' kids just, in handcuffs.
Girl,
it is.
It's a lot. And it's weird because we wake up on Tuesday mornings, do the show first thing, and sometimes days like today happen, and we're like, how do I keep up with this new cycle that is moving
stuff
so fast? What is going on? Because also, we don't know a lot of details about some of the things we're going to talk about. And then later in the show, we know a lot of details about things we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. But this breaking news, like the ship, is wild to us.
Yeah, so I think it's just worth saying that despite what you might see on your online discourse this week, because this is definitely what happens when there's an event like this bridge collapse, the three of us are not bridge and infrastructure experts.
No.
We actually don't have much insight to offer, and we're not going to pretend to. But instead, this week, we are going to talk about two other, I would say, different kind of seismic shifts we have seen in the news recently in culture. First of all, the New York State Appellate Court decision regarding Trump. And that bail money, honey.
That cat has 10 lives. I'm telling you.
Girl, we might be 16, 20 at this point. Wild. It's funny. I was just watching a clip of Michelle Pfeiffer's incredible performance and her like 9 lives scene when she's like, two left. I think I'll save one for Christmas, you know.
But a Catwoman.
I was rooting for that villain. I'm not rooting for this one. Anyway. We are going to talk about the implications of that decision. It was very huge. And of course, it's only one of, I believe, 4 court cases Trump is dealing with while also trying to run for president again by hook or by crook. We'll talk about what all that means, what we're seeing. And then also, and I'll be honest, maybe this isn't a seismic shift. This is just a Saeed obsession. Gen Z and aging is something I've been paying attention to. I think it's interesting. And this is really not coming out of place of judgment. I'm interested in like the social determinants of health. Is there maybe something going on in our culture, in our way of living, that is impacting the way Gen Z, and I would say probably the rest of us, are aging? I don't think that's like a shallow question.
I'll tell you what it is. Gen Z's been running around for 5 years wearing the shit we used to wear in high school. You look old, you look tired.
Sam is making a joke, but also there is some truth to that, which I can't wait to talk about.
They can't dress.
Well, fashion cycles have shortened a lot. So there is some rhyme to the reason here, or reason to the rhyme.
JNCOs didn't work the first time.
I love, I'm like, we're talking about the social determinants of health. Sam's like, I hate your mom jeans. Get rid of the mullets.
I'm telling you.
Damn. Wow. Well, before we get to a very nuanced and gentle conversation about aging, and a rough and tumble conversation about Trump, let's talk about the vibes. Obviously, the three of us are a little shooketh, shaken, and stirred. But beyond that, sisters, how are you feeling? Zach, how are you doing? What's your vibe?
Before I get into my vibe, I want to just say thank you for reminding me that Michelle Pfeiffer was Catwoman, because that was an iconic role.
Woo,
also, fun fact,
what a performance.
People should watch the behind the scenes of her filming the scene where she takes the whip and knocks all the mannequins' heads.
Oh, yes.
She does it
legit
in one take. It's
wow.
amazing.
Legit.
It's incredible. Anyway, icon, legend, Michelle Pfeiffer, you will always be famous. How I'm doing. I am shooketh due to many things, but one thing in particular has really shaken my tables, and Sam Sanders heard me talk about it last night, and that is I finished Love is Blind. I binged the whole thing over the weekend. My weekend was Love is Blind. I didn't do anything else, really.
You're welcome.
I got to the reunion, and my God, what is going on with straight people? I do not understand. There's so much trauma, so much therapy that is needed. Team AD forever. Team Clay people, go away.
But Clay is fine.
All American fine, but has so many daddy issues. Well, my God.
Because the daddy is the issue.
The daddy is the issue.
What I love about this season of Love is Blind, they put the generational curses on display.
Oh, yeah.
Also, for those who have not yet watched this season of Love is Blind, spoiler alert, the next 30 seconds or so, I'm going to be given major plot points. So fast forward if you need to. So, Saeed, you haven't watched, but Clay was a fuckboy in this season. Mm-hmm. He stands up the woman we love, AD, at the altar. And this comes after his dad, who was kind of a deadbeat philanderer, shows up the day before. And instead of giving his son Clay a pep talk before the wedding, he basically says to him, "You know how it be. Just do what you want to do. That's all I can say."
Damn.
Basically giving his son permission to hoe the day before his wedding.
Yeah.
So then Clay stands up this bride. And then afterwards, that same father is having a conversation with Clay's mother. And she basically says, "You trifling, no count." On camera, to his face. It's wild.
And she says something that's even, like, it's perfect television. It's incredible that these
it's
parents so carried the show at the end.
But black
she looks
parents.
At her ex.
Black
yeah,
parents.
Black parents carried the show. At the end, she looks at her ex-husband and says, "I forgave you for what you did. I'm now dealing with the fallout of new details from what you did due to this show. But what we should be focusing on here is that you haven't said sorry and let your son heal for things he never asked for in his life. And that's what you need to do." And I was like, let this play in every daddy's home while he's watching sports. Please put this on billboards. My father needs to listen to it. So many fathers need to listen to it. Like, it is like, we do not need to be our parents' sins. We don't need to repeat these family curses. We can break them. But we also need the parents, like
his
dad,
to talk about it.
Do better, my God.
Yeah.
Is that your vibe?
My vibe is just, I'm shaking. I was not prepared for, I thought it was gonna be overhyped because I saw the social media clips. I was like, sure. I love Love is Blind season one, but like, you know, Lauren and Cameron were the winners of that season in my mind. And it was a lot of turmoil. It was like, okay, they married someone they met for a day. Cool. This season, my God,
what
is going on?
It's good TV. Netflix has figured out what they're good at, and it's trashy reality TV. It's their sweet spot.
Okay. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm just sitting here looking concerned.
Yeah. Saeed is just like, bleh, bleh. My vibe this week, and y'all saw me texting the group chat last week after the news was revealed, but after we taped our episode pretty much all about Kate Middleton and the Photoshop heard around the world, we found out that she has cancer and is going through already preventative, I believe, chemotherapy. So we heard that news, and I immediately texted the group and said, "Did we say anything in that episode that we should regret, apologize for, retract?" And we said no, because our beef was with the way the royal family handled the messaging, not with anything medically doing with Kate Middleton. But after that, my vibe was soured when a lot of internet writers and trolls started to blame the viewing public for following this scandal after the cancer diagnosis. Perhaps the most prominent op-ed with this idea came from Pamela Paul, a New York Times columnist. And she basically was finger-wagging at everyone who raised questions about that Photoshop and the royal family's press strategy after this cancer diagnosis. And it all just felt like fake and tired. Because nobody was making jokes about cancer. We were making jokes about what is in actuality a state-led disinformation campaign.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
The royals are heads of state, and they were lying to us. And to try to turn this around and make me feel bad for calling out the lie, shut up. That's my
Let
vibe.
Let me say something about Pamela Paul and
say it, baby.
Please spill, because she has many, many sins.
Pamela Paul was the New York Times book editor for over a decade. And if you are a passionate reader, certainly if you're a writer or just like, you know, really part of the book world, you have probably some strong opinions. But I will say, you know, since Pamela Paul left that position as book editor and joined the opinion section about, I guess it seems like a year ago, it's kind of revealed, like, it's like, yeah, I mean, look, the only thing about the Pamela Paul, you're right, self-righteous finger wagging regarding Kate Middleton that stood out to me, I was like, well, this is interesting. I guess you're taking a break from bringing a turf this weekend.
Yeah.
Because usually Pamela Paul uses her word count to attack trans people in a really horrific way. So, you know, when harm is done and not accounted for, it continues. It remains animated. Decisions that Pamela Paul has made continue to impact people.
Well,
so,
and also, yikes. You call yourself gross. A journalist, and you're basically defending state-led disinformation. That's the side you want to be on. In no way can anyone say the Royals did the right thing about how they handled this.
Right.
Also, anywho. I just have to say, speaking, Love is Blind and not Shipman, Prince William is going through a lot. But the deleting of the post blaming his wife for that photo edit made me madder than the post themselves. Yeah.
They deleted
Oh, they deleted them. Yeah. So it's just like, really, just at least stand in your truth and be like, yeah, we were trying to create a shield for a protector. But it's still, even in that moment, it didn't feel like protection. So I have a lot of feelings about these straight relationships. I'm sorry for you all in them. I have concerns, feelings.
I know we have to move on, but this does feel significant. What I will say about Kate, I feel terrible for her.
1,000%.
Awful. Oh, my God. And to be abandoned by or perhaps even betrayed by the people whose literal jobs, if to say nothing, your husband, is to kind of protect you is really disappointing. But, you know, as we always say, white supremacy doesn't care about anyone, including people who consistently benefit from white supremacy. It's going to come for you, too. Really unfortunate. I wish her well.
Saeed, what's your vibe?
My vibe... Since, you know, it feels like we're kind of cleaning house out here. We're getting Clay and his daddy, you know, together. We're getting Pamela Paul together, the palace together. Homeland Security is getting Puff Sean Diddy Combs together. Yesterday afternoon,
girl,
not one but two of it. This is wild to me. Not one but two properties, a property in L.A. and a property in Miami, Florida, belonging to Diddy, were raided. The video is very dramatic. At least one of his sons was seen on video, arrested.
The sons are involved too? Wow.
Ooh, yeah. Not a family business. Not a family business.
Yeah.
And it's apparently connected to, I mean, there have been several lawsuits, but I think for many people, the lawsuit from Cassie, a.k.a. Cassandra Ventura, I think just is a beautiful name, that lawsuit that was settled in record time that alleged abuse, sex trafficking, assault. I mean, it's just, there's a lot of evidence. This is pretty shocking. And I just, you know, we're not doing like a full segment on it today, but it just, I think this is, in terms of the scale of harm that's being revealed, I think this is going to, with time, dwarf the Weinstein allegations.
Yeah.
Actually.
Well, and it's funny. I was having dinner with some good friends, one of whom is a record executive. And we're talking about Diddy. And he said, whatever you think of Me Too in Hollywood, the music industry is worse.
Yeah.
By orders of magnitude. The shit that goes down in that industry is wild. So long story short, there are no more secrets. There's just time. We're going to find out. We're going to find out. Anywho, we got to move on.
We will.
So we'll see. My vibe is just like, I'm watching and Beyonce's new album comes out on Friday. I'm just going to be holding on to the music for dear life.
I damn near forgot about Beyonce, given all this news.
This ain't Texas. I am scared.
Well, with that, that's a great bridge to the news of next week, we're doing a Beyonce episode. You're welcome. However, I put an asterisk around this. We will do this Beyonce episode, Miss Beyonce Knowles Carter, if not only if the album's like fully out and amazing, you don't like delay it for some reason, but also if you give us some visuals, give us more to chew on.
Don't give Beyonce an ultimatum.
She already said that we're the visuals, so we're the jester clown fool flops. We got to dance out
she
there.
She really
the
played us with that one. Also, how is it we are in hour zero of this album coming out and we still don't have Renaissance on streaming? Like, what is going on? I have questions.
Renaissance was truly the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, it was. Anyway, and before we get into this episode, we want to thank all of you who have sent us fan mail and reached out to us on social media. As always, we love hearing from you, so keep them coming at vibecheck@stitcher.com.
And for y'all who are listening to the new Beyonce album over the weekend, send us emails with your feedback on that album. Mm-hmm. We might incorporate that into our Beyonce chat next week. It's going to be Beyonce time.
Also, send a voice note if you want. We may play it on the show.
Do not send us videos of you lion dancing. Yeah, I've had enough.
I enjoyed the lion dancing.
I enjoyed it for a week. And now it's the same with the Cuffit dance. Dancing. The Cuffit dance went on too long. It went on too long.
Sam will forever be a grumpy old man. I love that. All right. Well, with that, shall we get into this episode?
For better or worse, go.
This ain't Texas. It is, though, New York. An appellate court in New York, to be exact.
Oh, there we go. Oh, what? Get out. Get out. Take your insurer and leave.
Keep it in. Don't make me get a new bottle. I'll bring it out right here. Anywho, we're talking about New York, concrete jungle where dreams are made of. Trump made some news there yesterday. Long story short, it's looking like there's no way Trump will see the inside of a jail cell before the election this November. And also, he'll most definitely be on the ballot no matter what. To start with the Trump of it all, as of last week, Donald Trump was on the hook for a lot of money. He was going to have to pay an almost $500 million bond in a New York State civil fraud case. Had he not been able to secure those funds, the state of New York was going to start seizing his assets potentially and freezing his bank accounts. This would have been a big deal for a man trying to run for president. Trump said he was trying to get that bond together, but more than 30 companies said no because too much of his wealth is tied up in his real estate. But on Monday, yesterday, a New York appeals court lowered that bond from $454 million to $175 million. This is major. It means that Trump can most likely keep campaigning, keep those businesses running, and keep all of his properties. The other scenario would have been pure chaos for him. Saeed, Zach, first, how do we feel about this? The court just threw Trump a major lifeline. It's really hard to overstate how differently this week would have been for Trump had he not gotten this ruling. We would have been talking about today Letitia James going to, like, put padlocks around his properties.
I have feelings and don't have feelings about this. I live in a world in which Trump is never going to be held accountable in the ways that will be sufficient enough for me. He is not being treated like a regular person of America, and he is continuously treated like the very rich are treated in these courts. So when this was hovering above him, all I thought was, one, Elon Musk or someone's going to step in and pay for this. And if not, he will get this appeal together and be able to have it lowered. And then it was lowered. So it just feels like he will continuously be given different exit paths out as long as someone's getting their money or someone sees him as potentially having more power in the world. So I don't know. I just have kind of, I've been exhausted. This man has run me down. He's been doing this stuff since what, 2015? We're almost 10 years into this. I am tired. I am so tired. That's how I
okay.
feel.
Okay, yeah. Saeed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this New York appeals court, it's five judges. I believe all of them, or at least most of them, were appointed by Democrats. Four of the five are judges of color, which, whether or not you want to say that's significant, I think it's at least worth noting.
Yeah.
I think with this decision, what I find most frustrating, correct me if I'm wrong, but this group of judges didn't explain their decision, which I understand they don't have to, but they didn't give any reasoning for it. They didn't say, listen, the burden of the previous bail was unreasonable. It was too high, and we don't, you know, what I would disagree, but, you know, that would be a reason. They didn't give us anything to go on, which is really frustrating when the most gracious leap of faith that I could take for the justice system. And you're right, the various decisions, how like the impeachment hearings, both of them went, you know, how the January 6th commission went. My gracious read is that people are hesitant to be the one deciding factor. I don't think anyone wants the history books to look back and say, see, that one person changed everything.
And we have been reading about this idea ever since a few weeks ago the Supreme Court ruled that Donald Trump's name could stay on the Colorado primary ballot. So a lot of states across the country were hoping to get Trump's name off the ballot because of a constitutional law that says if you have taken part in insurrection or treason, you cannot run for president. But every judge has said, you can't block it. We don't want to get involved in this. It's not our place to decide.
And significantly with Colorado and like the couple of other states, Maine, you know, any party that either proactively or just as a result of, you know, the wheels of justice that has been in the position to make decision, but Colorado stands out in my mind, the death threats that those lawmakers got immediately, you know, is significant.
Yeah. Yeah. But all of this feels like, whether it be judges, whether it be Congress, none of them want to have their names in the history books as having a finger on the scale for Trump. I think everyone at these higher levels of power wants to leave the choice on Trump to the voters in November. And they don't want any parts of it besides that. But this makes for a really weird election cycle, because even though Trump is going to get this lower bond, he has another trial that is set to begin April 15th. So we're still going to see Trump in court between now and November. It's going to be a wild few months. How are y'all just thinking about how to take all of it in, take the Trump in, as we continue to march towards an election in which right now Trump leads the polls?
I would say, and I know a lot of people fear this, as you were both just pointing out, that no one wants to be the person in history that makes a decision, but someone needs to make one soon, because if we keep having these delays, or if he keeps winning in these really weird ways as we hurdle towards an election, his followers and many people will just see this as support of his innocence, that he actually is being toyed with by our systems, and that Democrats are just doing this cat and mouse game with him. But someone needs to like actually prove the point and find him guilty of criminal misdeeds or whatever, and that may shift it. But right now, I think all of this is only helping his case if no one finishes these cases before November, in my opinion.
He's Teflon right now.
It's striking because, you know, until now in this conversation, we've actually overlooked the decision, multiple decisions in favor of E. Jean Carroll.
This is the woman who sued him over rape allegations and then over defamation.
Civilly.
At least twice. What's striking, that the only person right now, literally the only person who's been like, well, I'll be the person, is one of his direct victims, E. Jean Carroll.
Yeah.
E. Jean Carroll and her lawyers have been consistent and firm. And I think it's really striking that, like, a survivor of sexual violence is seemingly doing what all three branches of government seem like they're not going to do.
And what is so maddening about that verdict, you know, we all saw that big dollar amount when she won. There's a good chance that if she sees any of that money, it won't be for years. Trump will appeal. Trump will drag it out. Trump will hide assets. She may never get paid. You know, on top of what's happening to Trump or not happening to Trump in the courts, we're also seeing America's political industrial complex kind of circle the wagons around Trump and anoint him as the head of the RNC. You know, he literally took over the RNC with Trump loyalists. All of his opponents in his race for the presidency are gone. And now we're seeing many Trump loyalists end up in positions of power on TV. I'm going to let Zach lead on this one, but there's been a lot of drama over former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel being hired as an NBC News contributor. It's gotten so crazy that some of the biggest names in NBC News have gone on the air to speak out against their executive's choice to hire her. Rachel Maddow had a half an hour monologue on Ronna McDaniel last week. What's going on, Zach?
Yeah, it has become, as the Washington Post has put it, an insurrection at NBC.
Oh, not the word insurrection. Yeah, Wait a minute.
Insurrection's being used. Headline.
The Washington Post has some nerve using the word insurrection, but I digress.
That's why I had to mention it. It's here from last night. Jeremy Barr, a reporter there, he probably didn't write this headline, but, you know, he wrote the copy inside it that inspired the headline. But the headline is NBC facing on-air insurrection over hiring of Ron McDaniel. And what we've seen consistently since Sunday, when Meet the Press and Chuck Todd has his own interesting ethical background of issues, they all have pushed back on the hiring of Ronna McDaniel, who recently was pushed out of the RNC thanks to Trump, which was a peculiar thing to watch because Ronna has been one of his most prominent supporters around the 2020 election being fraudulent, in their opinion.
She established an election fraud committee at the RNC to make Trump happy.
Exactly. She really has led the charge here. So when she was pushed out, she went on an NBC show, and she denounced what she'd previously stated and pretty much said the election was real, Donald Trump is not right, and that she's on the different side of history. And then she gets hired. And all of the on-air talent have now begun using their shows to push back at this because they're confused at why someone who has systematically created the environment in which we live, in which the election is seen as not real, would now be given a platform to talk about news and truth on their airways.
And it also made a lot of folks at NBC feel like, oh, did y'all give her the deal after she changed her tune? Yeah. Was it pay to play? Like, kind of messy.
And that's what it felt like watching it, because she's been such a staunch supporter of him on the cable network shows, defending him constantly. And then suddenly she does a turnabout. Like, she's like, oh, no, actually, everything I've stood on for years isn't real. And thank you, NBC, for my six-figure check that you're writing me right now.
$300,000 to be a contributor. Yeah.
It's offensive that someone in charge of news would empower someone like Ronna McDaniel in this way. Mm-hmm. However, I can't get that passionate about this. And I know Sam and I were talking about this in particular just the other day, because it's cable news. I mean, the 24/7 news cycle is a construct of what, really the last 30, 40 years that has in some ways directly led to Trump. Like, you don't get Trump becoming the public figure he is without this broader infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, it's offensive. And if I was at NBC, I would be pissed. And clearly, they all are. I'm like, Chuck Todd's wishy-washy ass was going off on Meet the Press for him. And I'm like, well, if he's speaking up, that says something. But it's also kind of like what I'm saying about the broader government response to Trump. It's like, the systems that maybe have not created Trump, empowered him to become this seemingly unstoppable national figure, cannot also be the systems that are going to stop him.
And also, what we've seen is that the same systems that in 2015 said forcefully, he doesn't belong here, this isn't right, he can't be here, now he is fully enmeshed in those very systems to the point where his lackeys are on the payroll. He has fully captured the political industrial complex, and it in some ways belongs to him. And like, what used to be a media that would kind of cover Trump and what he was doing as outlier, abnormal, not just, not fair, now it feels like Trump is covered just kind of like, oh yeah, that guy again. Mm-hmm. He's become such a part of the political fabric that there is no more alarm ringing over this man.
No.
There's no more alarm ringing. And what does that mean for the run-up to our election? It feels as if everything he does now is just accepted as commonplace. And, well, he's here.
Yeah, it's increasingly clear that, and these actions didn't take place, but it's so clear that if there was going to be a moment of decisive accountability for Donald Trump, it needed to happen about 36 hours after January 6th.
Yeah.
And if that did not happen, it's very clear that it's not
going to
happen.
It meant that he won. Yeah, he won. Zach?
I was going to just add that because we haven't done anything since 2020, and we've just allowed him not only to survive it, but thrive in the wake of the insurrection, we've now normalized all of these things that were so abnormal, that were are in many ways illegal and need to be prosecuted and explored in courts, we've now said that they're okay. And now we've set an incredibly dangerous precedent for this November, and not even just this November, but this coming January, when if Biden was to leave and Trump was to come into office, the passing of power, what will that look like now under this new normal?
This is the through line of all of this, this Trump era that we're still living in. It's like, it's been proven to us time and time again, if laws are not enforced, they're only norms. And norms are optional. They're not mandatory. And we have seen a lot of things that we thought were mandatory about how you conduct yourself in a position of leadership. They've become norms and not laws, and they're optional. And Trump just ignores them when he wants to. Listeners, let us know how you're feeling about this. Are you following this stuff? How is this affecting you and your state of mind going into November, which is, dare I say, just around the corner? Let us know. Reach out. Vibecheck@Stitcher.com. Vibecheck@Stitcher.com. With that, I promise we will not say the word Trump anymore in this episode. It's done. All right. Time for a break. Stay with us.
Here's a new podcast you should listen to from an award-winning producer and host. Her name is Tanya Mosley. The podcast is called She Has a Name, and it's about the disappearance of Tanya's sister in 1987 Detroit. Tanya and her nephew, Antonio, travel through Detroit to uncover the mysteries of what happened to Anita. She Has a Name tells a story of loss, redemption, mending broken family ties, and facing the trauma experienced by countless individuals who've lost loved ones to violence. Join Tanya and Antonio as they unravel the secrets of what happened to Anita Wiley. Listen to She Has a Name wherever you get your podcasts. Growing up and seeing Oprah Winfrey on my television screen was radical for me. Having the opportunity to see a person who looked like someone in my own family, thriving on a television screen, running her own production, doing journalism that matters, and so much more, not only let me see myself, but also allowed me to dream a dream that led me to my own media career today. And that's what all of us who work in media now that are Black have. We have people that came before us that inspired us to know that we can go forward. And if you're interested in the next generation of influential Black voices, you can find them on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself, and you can find them all there at Black Stories, Black Truths. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective, from Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations. There's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story, but now they are the story. So within NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. It's NPR Noir. Turn on NPR today and hear a range of voices as varied, nuanced, and Black as the country we reflect. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, listeners, we're back. We're safe. The Beltway news cycle can't hurt us here.
Trump.
It can't hurt us. I feel like I'm doing ASMR.
Trump. I'm whispering Trump.
All right, we are going to talk about... It does feel like you need to like light a candle after you talk about that, man.
Seriously.
We are now going to talk about Gen Z and aging. As I said, this is a topic that I've kind of been privately... or not privately, group text level... obsessing over for the last couple of weeks. On March 13th, I posted this to Blue Sky. Okay, I have a question, and I truly mean no offense. Is it me, or are people in their early 20s increasingly looking like they are in their early 30s? I got all kinds of responses. But before I get to some of those, sisters, have you noticed this? And listen, y'all live in, I would say, beauty capital USA, LA. So have you noticed this online? Have you noticed this, you know, just walking down the street?
Yes. LA, I think, is the epicenter of this issue.
Okay.
Because everyone, including teenagers, and we have the data to prove it, are exploring plastic surgical procedures. Okay. Really young. I mean, even, you know, Kylie Jenner herself, I think, began doing lip fillers in her teens. But wow. because of this influx of surgery in LA, mm-hmm. I would argue, everyone's kind of looking the same age in this really radical way that is really unsettling, because I think everyone's a good 30 plus, and some of these kids are 20, and it's very weird.
I will say spiritually, it feels like the kids are performing middle age. Mm-hmm. You know, they all talk about how they're anxious and scared and nervous on social media. And then when they do leave the house, they're socially awkward and can't look you in the eye. None of them, I feel like, are frolicking and touching grass and fucking the way we all did in our youth.
Oh.
They just feel tired and sad. Oh, and that will age you. Listen, when I was 22, I was in the club dressed in business casual, posting 75 photos to Facebook.
Oh,
getting my
God.
Freak
the blazers.
On.
Wow.
Girl.
Yeah.
It was like guys wearing like, it was like the vest with the tie and then you'd be wearing jeans.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Business casual, baby.
Business casual with like a bleached denim and like
a
plunging V-neck. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Woo. But it felt like when I was their age, we were out in these streets. And now I feel like a lot of Gen Z just performs not wanting to go outside. And that will age you.
Well, okay, so this is interesting. So here's some of the responses I got. And this is just from Blue Sky. You know, people pointed out, and I think the three of us would agree to a certain extent, Gen Z is dealing with an unprecedented amount of stress.
From them phones, y'all.
God, I cannot believe we are friends. It is like being friends with a 75-year-old. Like, how did this happen? Phones?
Love you.
Well, to the point of being outside, have you seen the few malls or like kind of public shopping areas that exist won't even allow young people to be there without parents? Have you seen this?
Yeah, I know. I was talking to someone recently, a millennial, and this is going to get to the point I think you're going to. Someone who's early 30s, and she was walking around with her husband in one of these malls in, I forget, Michigan, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And the security guard came up to her, and I guess it was like only adults only. And he was like, "Where's your ID?" And she didn't have it. And she got kicked out of the mall because she looked too young. And she was like, "How do I look too young?" And it's because Gen Z kids and younger are looking older.
Wow.
And so these new policing of malls is becoming more difficult for, you know, youthful 30-somethings that are walking around without their IDs.
And also, I mean, I'm going to play a TikTok that's pretty wild in a moment. But and this just what you said just brought to mind. As three black men in particular, we know firsthand the implications of being mistaken for being older than you are. It's not always fun
it's
and
dangerous.
Games.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can actually get very serious. But listeners, I wonder if you've seen this TikTok recently from user Chris Batista. He is 38 years old, which makes him a millennial, like the three of us. And he responded to another user who was mocking him for being old. She was having a good old time in her TikTok making fun of him. We'll play a clip and a part of it, and I'll let him explain the rub with her critique.
I'm tripping out right now, and I'm not trying to be shady. I swear to God, I'm not trying to be shady. But when that video first started, I thought it was a fellow millennial sympathizing with what I was talking about. But when I looked on this person's profile, homegirl is 20 years old. And this is like one of the first times I actually felt what other millennials were talking about Gen Z looking a little bit older for her age. And homegirl was like loud about her opinions and was trying to like laugh at my expense. Don't want to be mean to her. Baby girl. Oh, Jesus. Like, you're pretty. You're beautiful. I'm not trying to, like, tear you down or anything, because looking older than your age isn't a bad thing and shouldn't be stigmatized by society. But when you're, like, laughing at my expense about the way I look.
Woo. What do y'all think?
I'm of two minds. On the one hand, I really think any generation is wading into dangerous waters when they start to tell folks how old they look or don't look. But on the other hand, I think Gen Z in particular, the odds are just stacked against them. I remember when I was young, the beauty standard, the pinnacle, was just like famous movie stars. Do you look like Julia Roberts? Do you look like Brad Pitt? Do you look like young Will Smith? And now, everyone in Gen Z, their beauty standards are digitized. The beauty standard is the face the filter gives you.
which is perfect and actually unattainable. So I think part of why Gen Z is feeling like they look older is because they are comparing themselves more than any other previous generation to an unfair and unreal standard. Of course you look old when you compare your face to a filter. It's a filter, you know? And I feel bad for them.
And to add to that, something I was thinking about, I went on a walk this morning through LA to get inspired. I wanted to go see the youth as they were going to school, people walking to work.
Yeah.
And what I started to realize is that since we've become older, there's been a complete collapse of a few institutions or a few systems that I think protected us and our youth from aging maybe too fast. Because of course we did things to age ourselves up. We are the first children of AOL Instant Messenger. I was having convos with grown people. Yeah, we were obsessed with blogs. We were sharing our diaries. We did everything. But you know, the big difference I've seen happen is through the introduction of technologies that are GPS based. So Instagram, Snapchat, that take your world around you, and you have to think of every place you go as a place to create content. So then you're thinking about filters, you're thinking about how you look. But also we've seen the collapse of celebrity. We grew up in an era where paparazzi existed because celebrities lived in LA and they would stage these photos going into certain restaurants, and it felt so distant. But with TikTok and how everyone can become a star no matter where you're at, these young people are facing real pressures of, oh, I could become famous overnight and now I have to look a certain way. And becoming an influencer right now has outranked acting, which used to be the number one most desired job. Influencers have become the number one desired job for young people.
You know what's wild? So if I'm around young kids watching them play, you know, we used to play doctor. Mm-hmm. We used to play teacher. We used to play nurse. These kids play influencer.
Wow.
7, 8-year-olds cosplaying YouTube influencers. It's wild. It's what they see.
They see us positioning that as aspirational.
Yeah. And I think it has a lot to tie with, you know, the audience. They're having to think about the audience isn't just the kids in my class. Their audience is the kids online, the kids on TikTok and the algorithm. And what the best comp of what every Gen Z or even younger than Gen Z, Gen Alpha, are dealing with is what we see in these Disney star documentaries that are going viral. How those Disney stars had to become adults and deal with adult issues really quickly, and it aged them up, people like Amanda Bynes. We're seeing this happen at scale with every young person who thinks that they should become a star on their own TikToks or social.
I do want to mention that, you know, by the nature of, you know, when we talk about faces, when the conversation about aging is specifically about faces, I think it's like the conversation becomes subversively coded as being about women and femmes. But I would say I've also seen this impact boys, people who present as masculine when we talk about bodybuilding, steroid usage. I mean, those bros, you know, it's a different version. It's a different manifestation, I think, of these pressures. But it's also interesting to see how male athletes, bodybuilders that are in their teens, early 20s, they themselves look like they're in their late 30s. They look like Chris Hemsworth, you know, prepping for Thor because they've grown up watching Chris Hemsworth play Thor.
You know? Well, and like, this is the thing about men. You can always tell when they start taking human growth hormone, the kind of things that bulk the muscle, it also makes their bodies hold on to water weight. So their faces get bigger and puffier and their necks get bigger and their cheeks get bigger and they just look older. They look older because there's like an artificial filling of the face. But yeah, this is, in one, let's call it what it is. It's body dysmorphia.
Right.
We have a generation more than most others that has been affected at a very young age by body dysmorphia. Mm-hmm. The body they see does not look right to them. Mm-hmm. And no matter how hard they work, it doesn't look right to them. That's troubling. And I don't know what the fix is, because it's like we continue to walk into this world where the ideal is computer generated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do we change that? I don't know.
And to that point, I ironically saw this from a TikToker a couple of years ago, an American who was spending a great deal of time in South Korea where they were teaching. And they learned, and they compared over the few weeks, they did a little kind of experiment. If you buy a phone in South Korea with the SIM card, honey, it comes with a filter standard on its camera.
Yeah.
What?
And that's TikTok now, too. The default TikTok is to filter your face.
Default. So, and this goes to the point of a New York Times article published over the weekend titled, "Why Does Gen Z Believe It's Aging Like Milk?" Yikes.
Wow.
And again, that comes in, and the article, you know, focuses on Gen Z themselves having this conversation, you know.
Yeah.
But this felt keen. This comes from Renee Eglin. She is a psychology professor at Northwestern University. She says, quote, "There is a sense in which young people have forgotten what faces look like." And the article, and this person continues, "Can we blame them?" And this is kind of what Sam and Zach, what you've both been saying. Gen Z grew up endlessly scrolling through idealized versions of their own faces and the faces of others. They've encountered more imagery of other people with anti-aging cosmetic features, plastic surgery, and fewer examples of faces that have naturally aged. So that's certainly part of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to bring it back to the joke I made earlier, these kids are not doing themselves any favors by dressing in Y2K core. Baby, that is not youthifying. It's not.
It's not. And where I would defend them, because I understand why they're doing it. Some of it looks good. Some of these girls look amazing. But it's because before social media really blew up, fashion cycles went by a 20-year rule. So you would take 20 years for something that was popular in the 50s to come back, then it'd be the 70s and the 90s, so on and so forth. What we've seen, especially since 2019, is a collapse of all fashion cycles. And we now live in a world in which certain jeans from the 90s are in and being mixed with shoes like loafers from the 50s. And it's this blending of all, because we have such a massive access to every type of fashion. And these young people are very creative and they're blending it all together. But we as millennials are like, Ugg boots? That was my high school. And my high school time was not that long ago. And now you're wearing them. So, you know, there isn't as much distance as when we were growing up. I remember my grandparents being like, oh, I wore that when I was a kid. And that felt cool. It was like vintage. Now vintage means, you know, 15 years ago. And it's why Mean Girls, the movie, looks the same. Mm-hmm. Like, it all looks the same. And that's the problem.
And to wrap, I mean, because, and this really, this isn't from a place of judgment. I think it's interesting. And I think, you know, we can all learn, as we've seen over the course of this conversation, we're talking as much about Gen Z and young people as we're talking about ourselves. I think it's possible to have a self-aware and productive conversation about aging, because we are aging too. And I think it's worthwhile thinking about. But I would be remiss if I didn't point this out. And this is just like, we just have to say this if we're talking about aging. This goes to Blue Sky user Dio, who was like, you know, because everyone's talking about all of these other reasons, and I think they all probably are related. But he was like, I think the main difference is that we as millennials in our generation, we eliminated smoking for a generation. That was a big difference. And now it's come back via vaping, which is very popular, particularly among Gen Z. Dr. T.N. Rekha Singh, a dermatologist in the UK, points out, vaping involves breathing in and breathing out aerosolized liquid, which contains harsh chemicals, including nicotine, propylene glycol, and vegetable glycerin. And just one example, specifically, she points out, nicotine tightens blood vessels in the skin's outermost layers. This reduces blood flow, carrying oxygen and nutrients to the skin, and this especially impacts the skin around the eyes and the mouth. So listen, Gen Z, if you like it, I love it. But if you do feel that you are aging in a way that makes you uncomfortable, and I think this is true for all of us, if something feels out of sync and you realize that, for example, you are vaping, that is one very easy decision that you can make to change that will have a clear impact on, you know, how you appear and feel.
Also, don't take retinol before you're 35. Some of these kids out here, that's heavy chemicals.
Yeah.
Come on now.
It's wild. I feel like it's like instead of marketing to kids, preteens, and teenagers, and this really isn't even a Gen Z thing we're talking about now, instead of getting them to spend all their money on toys and posters, it feels like marketers are like, spend your money on this skincare.
Yeah, because like now we have these young people who are going to Sephora, and I'm like, where did Claire's go? Where do these young people stores go? Everyone's going to the adult stores.
Go pierce something.
Yeah.
Go pierce something and go make out behind the bleachers. Oh, my God. Yeah. Go get a Ouija board. Go have fun. My gosh.
Well, anywho, we will leave it there for now. I can feel Sam was about to say, don't get me started. So let's just wrap it up.
Whenever I say don't get me started, what I want you to do is get me started.
Get him started.
Okay.
But listeners, what do you think? Because, again, this is a really interesting conversation. One of you mentioned the book Flawless. Who's that author?
Elise Hu, a good friend of mine, former NPR colleague, wrote a book all about how digital culture, particularly South Korean culture, has totally effed up our beauty standards across the globe. We are in literally a world that South Korea created, and it's a wild, wild west.
Wow. So, you know, amazing. Listeners, if you've read Flawless, let us know your thoughts. Are you thinking about this? Are the three of us, are you like, listen, y'all are three cis gay men, shut the fuck up. I'm giving you an invitation to tell me to shut the fuck up if you feel that's fair, but you got to make your point.
I'm giving listeners an invitation to write and say how good our skin looks, baby.
Would love that. They'd be like, you know what? Of all the podcast hosts,
just glowing, mama, audio, glowing.
Okay, we'll take a break and come right back.
Don't get me started.
Oh my gosh, I saw it. I was like, he's getting started.
I'm getting started. Do you know that the original lyrics to the Black Eyed Peas song "Let's Get It Started" were "Let's Get Retarded"? And they had to change.
I did know that. Yes. And I made myself forget.
Yes.
God, the 2000s Trauma. Were awful.
Yeah.
Oh, the 2000s were awful.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control your own body and get the health care everyone needs has been stolen. And now politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect your right to control your own body and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, you can help reclaim your rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, listeners, we are back. And before we end the show, we'd like to do what we love to do each week, which is tell you what's keeping our vibes right this week. And to get us going, I want to go to Sam Sanders.
Okay, I will tell y'all what I am enjoying right now. And it is a nice little band that you can put on just to set the vibes. Every song of theirs gives you the same kind of energy. It feels like a desert sunset and incense and birds in the background. This is a band that's been around for a long time. They're called Krungban. It's spelled KHRUANGBIN. I've been listening to them for years. They're a trio out of Houston that does really psychedelic, kind of smooth, mostly instrumental rock. And it's just wonderful vibe music. They put out a whole album, actually, with Leon Bridges singing over their guitars, and that is even more vibey, but it's perfect for road trips. It's perfect for cleaning the house. It's perfect for just chilling, and I've been playing them nonstop the last several days while I was out in the desert, and I'm still playing them here. And what's fun about them, once you listen to all of Krungban, all their albums have that similar vibe. Once you're done with that, you can just go to like Krungban Radio on Spotify or whatever, and it gives you more like that. Just immaculate vibes. Okay. Immaculate vibes. Yeah, their latest album, and they're all really good, but their latest album is called Ali from 2022, but they have a bunch of stuff. Check them out if you want to just vibe and chill. This is kind of in the similar vein of my recommendation last week of Kacey Musgraves' new album. chill vibes, more of that. I know Saeed wasn't too much in love with it, but I'm in a chill vibes place right now, and this is giving me that.
This recommendation's a little more compelling. I tried to listen to Casey's album. I couldn't get by the way homegirl sings the word cardinal.
Cardinal?
Really? Cardinal. I was like, girl, Casey, I thought I was supposed to be relaxing. Casey.
Wow.
Take me deeper into the well, I guess, because.
Anywho. Listeners, if you're liking these chill vibes of my music recommendations, send me some more recommendations for more chill stuff. I like it chill right now.
Chill
these days.
All right. Well, Saeed, what's your rec? Is it chill? Is it a chill poem?
It's not. It's a very chaotic poem. So I'm excited about this book. So this is from an anthology, Best American Poetry 2012, edited by Mark Doty. I actually got this at a bookstore in a used bookstore in Buenos Aires last August. And I love going to used bookstores when I'm traveling and seeing what I can find. And this poem is by Juliana Baggett. And I like it because, I think being a mom, being a parent, giving birth, raising a newborn, it's like physiologically, it's like black metal. It's rough.
I was talking to a friend of mine who has a newborn and she was stressing out because the kid's not sleeping. So like she can't sleep. And I was like, how is it? And she goes, Sam, I've lost my sense of self.
Yeah.
I don't know who I am anymore. It's just the baby.
It's pretty crazy. And, you know, we kind of drape it in all these, like, pastel, oh, the beauty of being a mother, you know. But it's like, no, this is a pretty wild experience for the parent and the kid. And so this poem by Juliana Baggett is titled For Furious Nursing Baby. Frothy and pink as a rabid pig, you, a mauler, a lunatic, stricken with a madness induced by flesh. Squeezed my skin until blotched, nicked. Your fingernails are jagged and mouth slick. Pinprick scabs jewel my breasts. Your tongue, your wisest muscle, is the wet engine of discontent. Itself fastens by a purse bead of spit while your elegant hands flail, conducting orchestral milk, and sometimes prime the pump. Nipple in mouth, nipple in hand, you have your cake and eat it too. Then, when wrenched loose, you'll eat sorrow, loss. One flexed hand twist as you open your mouth to eat your fist.
Wow.
Babies are cute, but they're also parasites.
They're parasites. It's an intense experience. That's For Furious Nursing Baby by Juliana Baggett. I love her poetry, and I love it's visceral. Like, it's just, you feel it. You feel the pinpricks and the pinches, and, you know, it's beautiful, but it's also just like, as you said for your friend, like, at best, an overwhelming experience for the parent and their body.
My favorite sentence from the poem: your tongue, your wisest muscle, is the wet engine of discontent.
Ooh.
Woo.
Ooh.
I don't want no more kids. I don't want no kids. I don't want no kids.
More.
I mean, I take that back.
You have two dog babies.
My two dog babies are enough because they don't nurse.
Well, Zach, we've got a calm recommendation from Sam, a traumatizing recommendation from me. What's your recommendation?
I have an edible recommendation.
Oh,
okay. Ooh, edible, yes. Fine. So not edibles as in weed, but edible as in a dessert.
Oh,
girl, stop playing games.
I can see you guys got really excited. It's not 420
perked
yet.
Up.
You know, that's in a month. I am the biggest victim to TikTok ads for new products. I will buy them. It works. Paid spin works on me, I'm sorry to say. And something that has come across my TikTok, and it's huge on TikTok right now, is a new product called Alpha Prime Bites. They're brownies. Have you all seen this on TikTok? So there are protein
not
brownies.
Not weed brownies.
Not weed brownies. These are just protein brownies. They got 19 grams of protein, 5 grams of collagen. It's like deep in like food, health, TikTok. And they are everywhere. Like every influencer is having to deal with them. It's called Alpha Prime Bites. They're brownies. Okay. And they come in a bunch of different flavors. There's a cookie dough. There's a chocolate donut, which is my favorite. There's a cinnamon roll. And I tried them last night for the first time. I ordered them. No one's paying me to say this. I bought them with my own money. And you warm them up for 15 seconds. And my God, it was one of the best brownies I've ever had in my life. Okay. So
really?
Looking for a fun treat. I know it's spring and people are on their fitness tip. Buy these. They got great macros. I highly recommend them.
Not great macros. Girl.
Listen, we were talking about Gen Z and youth.
I'd be running for my life to get away from that TikTok shop. So I don't know nothing about this, honey.
It was my first time buying from TikTok shop. It was actually a seamless process. Okay. Go TikTok. Yeah.
All right.
Whew. Well, listeners, what are you feeling or not feeling this week? Do you like the protein brownies? Do you have protein brownie recipes you want to share with me, actually? Send them.
Do you have actual edible recommendations? Because clearly Sam and Saeed were like, we're disappointed.
Send all of it. Send all of it to us at vibecheck@stitcher.com. And with that, that's our show.
That's
the
show.
Thank you for listening to us in this this roller coaster of a show today.
A lot of colors to this episode.
I mean, we started with the bridge collapse. We started there.
That's true.
Yeah.
Truly a journey.
I told you not to watch that video until after
you
we recorded.
You mentioned it right before I hit record. Anywho.
Well, we made it through. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of Vibe Check. If you love the show and want to support us, please make sure to follow the show on your favorite podcast listening platform, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and leave a review. And most importantly, tell your friends. Tell all of them.
Huge thank you to our producer, Chantel Holder, engineer, Rich Garcia, and Marcus Holm for our theme music and sound design. Also, special thanks to our executive producers, Nora Ritchie at Stitcher and Brandon Sharp from Agenda. And special shout out to Nora because she's in LA this week.
Yeah,
and yesterday she took me and Zach and Brandon out for drinks and dinner at this wonderful, beautiful rooftop. Nora, you're the hostess with the mostest. Thanks for being so nice to us. It was great to hang.
I love that. We'll have to have a reunion soon.
Yes.
Okay, and listeners, don't forget, we want to hear from you. You can email us at vibecheck@stitcher.com and keep in touch with us on Instagram. And like I said, I'm also on the Blue Sky over there causing trouble.
It's like they're paying you. Like they're paying you the way you be plugging Blue Sky.
Oh, did I tell y'all? Someone had to send it to me. They actually used one of my posts in like a Blue Sky ad. Lord Jesus.
Aww.
Oh, no.
You better get some ducats out of that.
No.
Get some coin, my bro. Get some coin.
Anyway, my bro, Jesus Christ. In the meantime, you can keep in touch with us on Instagram at Zach Staff, at Sam Sanders, and at The Ferocity. Stay tuned for our Beyonce episode. Look, we had to go through the rough and tumble of this episode because next week, it's Beyonce.
The mountaintop.
We're going to the mountaintop. See you then. Bye.
Bye, my bros. It's the term of endearment. When I call you my bro, it means I love you.
My bro. Because of Love is Blind, I tested out in the privacy of my home using the word man in a sentence. You know how they're like, yeah, man, I shuddered.
I feel it in the body. You feel it in the body.
Leave it in. Leave it in. Leave it in, my bro, Nora. Leave it in.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.
Stitcher.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.